Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Good morning, everybody. This is Tyler Dunn here with Bob McGinn for another Packers podcast at McGinn headquarters, just a few miles away from the stadium. Bob, how's everything going?
Good. And I hope my wife Pat can put up with us for a little time here, Tyler.
I know we're a couple of weary, dreary souls here, coughing, sneezing, a little bit of everything. But hey, we got a couple days off here. What in the heck are you going to do with yourself, Bob?
I'm going to see my grandson.
Wow.
Well, see both my daughters and just hang out and try not to think about football.
Very nice.
How about you?
You know what? It's time to get back at that guitar. I told you I picked up guitar about a couple months ago, and it's been pretty rough lately. You know what? It's funny. When I go in for lessons every week, there's like this 7-year-old boy who goes in before me. And his dad picks him up, and then I go in with the same teacher. And he's always a little bit ahead of me in the guitar book. It's a little mess. It's such a blow. You know, I can't keep up with a 7-year-old at this thing, but I'm trying. It's getting there. Wow. Playing a little Oasis. It's a work in progress.
Cool.
But I like you said, a little non-football for a day or two.
You got it.
But hey, we got a lot to talk about, Bob. You know, you were quite the troublemaker before this past game. Writing about Greg Jennings, the possibility of a trade. We're going to get into that. We're going to review the Bears game. Green Bay won, a different kind of win, a kind of win this team really didn't have last year. I think we should definitely talk about Jay Cutler. The Packer fans just love the guy, so we got to talk about him. Cedric Benson, the ground game. What's the future of the rushing attack for Green Bay? What's going on in the secondary? And then we're going to get to your Twitter questions. So, Bob, first things first. Greg Jennings didn't go this past game with a groin injury, but you brought up the possibility that a trade would make sense for Green Bay with Jennings. His contract obviously expires after this season. A lot of people, a lot of listeners out there probably read your column. Just kind of elaborate, and why did you come to this idea here for Green Bay?
I mean, I think they should do it if they can get a good market value, whether it's a veteran player that can help him at some position or a second round pick or a combination that would equal a second or a first, something in that range. Listen, I don't like Ed. I've always advocating winning now, and Greg Jennings can help them win now. But they have a lot of players at that position, and if they do try to re-sign this guy, they're going to lose somebody in unrestricted free agency down the road. This team is headed for some cap problems, and he wants a lot of money. There's not one player in that locker room. There's nobody I've ever covered who I've ever begrudged them a cent that they make. This is a hard, hard, violent business with a short lifespan. Man, I'm all for it. Get what you can. They are the game. They purely are the game. The suits are not the game. They are the game. So, and Greg Jennings, he's earned it. He's earned this huge paycheck. I just don't think it should come here. For the good of the franchise, I think it should come elsewhere, and I'm sure he will get it. All he has to do is overcome some of these injuries. He is a tremendous player, and he has all the pelts on the wall.
That's a good point. I mean, it's the guy deserves a big contract. He's going to get a big contract somewhere, but does going to fit into Green Bay? I think that's a big question here too. But you know what? To play devil's advocate, I mean, this is a team that's going to contend for a Super Bowl. And if you're going to do that, why would you trade away your number one receiver? I mean, we've seen the effect of Greg Jennings not being in there. You could say some problems there against the Bears in the passing game are attributed to Greg Jennings not being there. You saw last year at Kansas City, the offense was kind of in a funk when he was hurt. Don't you want all your horses right now? I mean, maybe you take a compensatory pick down the road. I mean, they didn't trade Matt Flynn because Aaron Rodgers' backup, that's the insurance policy, or the insurance guy. I mean, why would you just give Jennings away like that?
Their group is pretty good. You know, I mean, Jordy Nelson's 1A, 1B, however you want to describe it. Randall Cobb is untapped potential. James Jones had a rough game here the other day. He's still a good player. Donald Driver, I still think the guy can play. Jarrett Boykin, you got DeAndre Burrell. You got Finley who can go out and play wideout. You got DJ Williams who can play wideout. We really haven't seen him. That's a lot of people. Plus, you got Cedric Benson as another weapon. I think they can move the ball. I don't know about Jennings' injury situation. His market value could just decrease if injuries occur. I just think for the future of this thing, you might be in position of losing a Finley, a Raji. The salary cap is they're not going to lose Matthews or Rodgers, but what they make is going to tie up so much of this salary cap, and the cap's not going to increase next year hardly at all.
You know what?
They can get a two, they can get a one. Tyler, that is something they can really use for the future of this team. They can be a contender for years and years to come.
Could they really get a first-round pick?
They might be able to. I mean, you look at the history of this thing. I mean, Roy Williams got one.
But having GMs kind of wised up when you look at the awful, the trades you mentioned in your story, Joey Galloway, Roy Williams, there have been some pretty bad trades with wide receivers. Having teams kind of wised up and just know that draft picks are pretty precious, not to... I don't know if they could get a first.
No, I'm not saying I don't know that they could either. But if somebody has an injury in the next 7 weeks, a contender loses a receiver, man, and they want to win right now, and they think they're going to win the Super Bowl, that team, maybe it's going to be the 31st pick in the draft, 32, then you could certainly think about it with Green Bay. I mean, there's going to be all kinds of things, factors in the next, you know the way this business is. Every week there's new factors come up that change. I mean, I don't know. There's things in this Jennings things that I wrote on Wednesday during the day that now I might not even change because we've seen one more game. This stuff is so fluid. But right now, I still think they should do it if they can get fair market value for Greg Jennings.
And I don't think you're arguing the point that he just means a ton to this offense. I mean, it does really start with him, right? I mean, he's the one attracting a lot of the double teams. He's the one you can line up everywhere. He's the one that leads the NFL in 40-yard receptions since, what, 2007? To me, it does start with Greg Jennings offensively. I know Jordy Nelson had a big year a season ago, but you know what you have in this pecking order right now with Jennings, Nelson, Cobb, Jones, Driver, Finley. To me, you just try to hang on to that as long as you can.
The only thing I'll say about that, Tyler, in training camp, Greg was out like 16 days, you know, and he missed a couple games.
Right.
Jordy Nelson was there every day and improved. I mean, this guy is a tremendous player right now. And I dare say if we called 10 scouts some and asked who the number one receiver in Green Bay, some would say Jordy Nelson. I mean, they really would. Greg Jennings missed that time last year. We haven't seen the great Greg Jennings since prior to December 11 of 2011.
That's a good point.
I don't know who's number one anymore. I just don't know.
That's a good point. Also, something to consider here, too, though, is Green Bay could kind of wait this out, see how B.J. Raji does this season. Kind of a down year last year. See how Jeremichael Finley does. If those guys struggle, if some of these guys with deals coming up don't necessarily take that next step, couldn't you maybe fit a Jennings contract of some sort, or even if it's the tag for another season, into your salary cap?
All right, so if you tag him, that's going to be around estimated $10 million. That all counts on the cap immediately, March, whatever the first day of the league year will be, March 2nd. That's a $10 million hit. I mean, you do a long-term deal with Jennings, figure that first year cap would be five maybe. This is 10.0 or thereabouts. What was the other thing I was going to say? Oh, okay. I know. He wants more, Tyler. They're shooting for 16, the Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, you know, more power to him if he can get it. He's at 9.2. Vincent Jackson's at 11.2. These are average per year. These aren't cap hits. Yeah. I mean, but ultimately that thing's going to be reflected on the cap. Say he settles for 14. You can't handle that when you got Jordy Nelson making 4.2. I mean, they're the comparable player. That'd be more than three times as much. It's just not in the cards. You cannot do it in the modern-day NFL salary structure.
This team's built on wide receivers. I'm just going to say that this is the way Ted Thompson's kind of built the team. And that could also play into the other side of things. You could say, oh, let Jennings go. He's just going to draft another wide receiver and keep on chugging along. But to me, the core of this team offensively still, even with Benson kind of catching fire here this past game, is the wide receivers and the passing game. It's interesting.
Your point's well taken.
But, you know, I think you brought up a great point with this trade. It's something I never really thought about. I think a lot of people weren't really thinking about. Why would you trade your best receiver? But Reiner Coleman makes a lot of sense to a lot of people right now. So I guess we'll see what happens there. Let's get into this game. I mean, we hadn't really talked about the San Francisco game on the podcast either, but we're going to jump right into the Chicago game. Initial thoughts, Bob. You had your Rating the Packers in today. Everybody can check that out in the paper. But what did you think about this win?
I was surprised the Bears offense was so impotent after just kind of seeing, I watched the third exhibition game and, I thought they did some good things and, but they've really had offensive line problems down there for about 6 years. 06, last time they were at the Super Bowl was their last really solid offensive line. And, it's just a way of life for Jay Cutler. He just has to dodge and avoid all the time. His eyes just almost have to come down, which is the worst thing for a QB, because there's just jailbreaks four, five, six, seven times a game. I mean, you just don't see that in Green Bay. We've never seen that in Green Bay since back to the late 80s, early 90s with Mandrich and those guys. It's just jailbreaks. And Cutler just got frustrated. I mean, the Capers had a great plan, and there it went. How'd you see it?
I think it's a good example of the pass rush for Green Bay kind of being an answer for everything defensively. They got after Jay Cutler, whether it was Clay Matthews, who had a career game, Eric Walden got some pressure, DJ Smith had a sack. It kind of came from everywhere, and you just kind of saw that helping everything in general. In the secondary, Cutler didn't have time to find his receivers. I think Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey were targeted a total of 20 times against Indianapolis. It might have been five or six times in this game just because he didn't have time to find him. There was somebody in his face back there. So just goes to show that if Green Bay can keep up a steady pass rush, that's just going to help everything else.
Charles Woodson said something interesting on the Jim Rome show yesterday. He said that they knew the Bears receivers really can't run.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Marshall has lost speed through injury. Jeffries is a big guy, but, I mean, he's not really a sudden speed guy. Hester can run all day, but Earl Bennett's a possession guy, so they don't have great speed. That's one thing. The other thing, you know, Mike Tyce just sends Marshall off to one side, and okay, we know immediately what the Packers are doing. They're going to bail with Tremont Williams, Burnett over the top. He really didn't adjust, move Marshall around, motion him, get him inside on slot, get three to one side. It seemed like a static game plan. I mean, it's, you know, I don't. The passing game is certainly Neanderthal compared to some of the cutting-edge stuff we've become accustomed to in Green Bay.
That's a great point, and you have to give a guy like Sam Shields some credit in that by tilting so much attention toward Brandon Marshall with Tremont Williams, Burnett, even some help inside, they kind of trusted Sam Shields to take on Alshon Jeffrey, who had a really good game in his rookie debut, and Shields was kind of up to the test. Dom Capers said it was one of Shields' best games in his career.
Interesting, yeah.
All right, we're still going through some categories here from the game. First off, player of the game. Who do you got?
I got Matthews. Yeah. You agree?
Totally agree. I mean, he was a monster out there. They couldn't block him, whether it was one-on-one, chipping in with the running back. You saw there was a play, one sag he had where he actually had a spin move. Webb was there for the spin move, and then Matthews just kind of tossed him inside and got to Cutler for the sack. He was almost unblockable.
I mean, again, I thought Tyce would just go to the ends of the earth trying to take this guy out of the game. I mean, I saw teams do that team after team after team, year after year, do it with Reggie White. Well, he's approaching that level. Mm-hmm. You just, you know, you double him 70, 80%. You just have to. And I think Matthews was doubled 38%, and it's just not enough. He dominated the game.
Right. And do you think that Matthews has a point after the game? He said that a lot of his success came from other guys generating a pass rush. I don't know. It just seemed like Matthews was kind of going rogue there and having a career night. But did others help him out too? Did Derek Walden generate a steady pass rush? Nick Perry had some problems with his hands. He didn't play a ton, but some of these other guys.
There was some of that. I mean, Gabe Kareemi over on the other side, the second-year right tackle, I mean, he couldn't bend. He just – he was struggling against Walden. Yeah. Nick Perry rushed better around the corner than he has in any game all that since we've seen him. Desmond Moses did some stuff. But let's face it. I mean, Matthews is also a very willing sacrificial lamb on stunts. Mm-hmm. They have that amoeba defense, or he just slashes inside when they send maybe Woodson or DJ Smith off his edge. And he's just occupying blockers for others. Yeah. He sets things up for others, too.
That's a great point. The turning point of the game, let's get into that. To me, it's got to be the fake field goal, right? I mean, McCarthy takes a huge gamble. Fourth and 26 from the 27. You're only up 3-0 at the end of the first half. It was a pretty lame game offensively for both teams at that point. And he said he wanted to send a message, and he calls the fake field goal. Mass State flips it to Crabtree, and off to the races he goes.
I mean, do you even think about surprise plays when you're watching a game?
No, not at all.
Do you ever think about a surprise onside kick? No. Do you ever think about a fake punt, a fake field? I don't either. But you know these special teams coaches are thinking about it. There's an awful lot of wheels turning on those sidelines that, you know, the casual observer like us, you don't even think. There's a lot of things going on in a football game.
Pretty remarkable that McCarthy said that fake field goal has kind of been in the team's playbook here for a couple of years. They've kind of been saving it for a few years. I mean, and to pull it out in that moment,
yeah,
it's gutsy. I mean, it's almost a play where if you need 5 or 6 yards maybe because you're running up a seam, you don't know what's going to happen. One guy misses his block. One Bears guy is tipped off, and you get 5 yards. Even if you get 10, 15 yards, it fails.
Yeah.
They needed 26, pretty much a touchdown here.
You know, McCarthy said at least we would have had him backed up at that point, but still it would have been a 3-0 game instead of a 6-0 game, the way Crosby's kicking. Yeah, it was quite a moment.
What didn't go right for the Packers this game?
Well, you've written quite a bit about the offense. Let's have your thoughts on this now. I guess we should talk about the offense. Yeah. Our colleague Tom Silverstein wrote about that after the game in a good story. How do you see it?
Boy, I just think coming into this season, you couldn't expect another 45-touchdown, 6-interception season from Aaron Rodgers, right? I mean, that was pretty remarkable what he did a year ago. I mean, you kind of give me a look. Did you expect it? Did you think that?
I just wasn't sure.
Yeah.
I mean, after the way he played last year, all bets were off.
You never know. But, I mean, the defense had to improve. The running game had to improve. And right now you're kind of seeing this passing game sputter so far. I mean, this is two games now where they haven't really been themselves. A lot of it is what defenses are doing to them. They're sitting back with the two safeties. They're getting a pass rush with four up front. And you're not seeing a lot of the big plays from a year ago. The Green Bay almost has to be too patient. And it's just not the same passing game. So I think that's maybe a mild concern so far. But I don't really think Green Bay's that worried about it. They know what they have in Aaron Rodgers and the receivers. They think that eventually they'll get it together. And they're probably happy that they are having a pass rush. They do have a running game. And they're winning a different way, or at least they did against the Bears. So the sense I get from players, from coaches, is that they're not concerned at all about Rodgers. And they're almost kind of happy that they had to win a game like this.
They're in the meat of their schedule. I mean, these are two very good defensive teams they've faced, especially the Niners. They've had a bunch of injuries in training camp at the skill positions. Jennings didn't play. Other than that, there's no real – I mean, they weren't that sharp all summer. Other than Jordy Nelson.
Even would you say training camp practice and the preseason, they weren't necessarily lights out?
Weren't blowing us away every day.
No.
Especially on those two-minute end-of-game things that they run every other day in practice. There weren't that many fantastic moments.
And with an off-season, a full off-season to prepare for Green Bay, defensive coordinators, they're going to keep doing what Kansas City and the Giants did a year ago, try to be aggressive, maybe with some coverage underneath. The Bears, they like zone, obviously, but they had the two safeties back. They did get a pass rush up front. Mm-hmm. Some variation of that Green Bay's probably going to see for a while here.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is why I wrote today that, at least for the time being, maybe you get Cedric Benson going. Maybe he does get 20 carries a game. Right now, that could be their best bet offensively.
All right, that was a very interesting story, Tyler. I mean, you took a bit of a chance, you know, trying to project ahead, get ahead of the curve on that. And so, I mean, Benson had 20 carries, and you foresee a possibility in which you ride the guy 25 times, right? You think he's a really good player.
Well, he's been a high-volume back basically his whole career, at least in Cincinnati. So that's what he's used to. He gets better with more carries. Coaches acknowledge that here. I don't really see him as this back that is going to be touching the ball 5 to 10 times a game and giving a spark that way. He's better with more carries. Even in this past game, it seemed like McCarthy got away from the run a little bit. There's times when Benson kind of heated up and you saw the Packers go back to what they know and passing the ball all over the place. With Cedric Benson, maybe just keep feeding the ball 20 times a game until this offense, this passing game, kind of figures things out. Because right now, they have to force defenses out of that too deep shell.
And that's right. And the way you do it is you get a safety in the box by running the ball. I agree with that.
And are you surprised with how well Benson's running? I mean, it wasn't this breakout, fascinating game by any means. But this is somebody who wasn't on a team the whole offseason. It's still pretty new to the system. He said he's still spending a lot of time watching film. He watched some of his old film back at Cincinnati to try to recharge those batteries. But are you a little surprised that he did have the game he had?
You know, Mike McCarthy said something interesting after the game the other night. He basically said he was born to run, you know, to borrow a Springsteen title. But he does have
overrated,
that in him.
By the way. Not a Springsteen fan.
Okay, all right. You know, he came from Texas, set all those records down there. For off-field problems, he didn't make it. I like him as a back. Now, he's going to fumble the ball, and he may run out of gas. I don't know what kind of real condition he's in, but right now I'd ride him as much as they can. Starks will be back. I still don't think he's a real bad back.
Yeah, they could have a two-headed approach here running back.
So. I keep thinking back to that 2010 playoff run.
Yeah.
The guy hurt people in that time. And those Steeler defensive coaches, when I was doing the Super Bowl book, I think he was 12 for 48 in the Super Bowl. And all two of them, Keith Butler, the linebacker coach, I remember specifically, he said, that team ran the ball well against us.
Huh.
Now, they didn't do it often, but with Starks and what they had, Scott Wells at center, Clifton, that was 12 for 48 against the best run defense in the league by far.
So you could have two downhill backs. They fall forward. They get you positive yards. At the same time, we're not saying this is
a full-fledged
identity change here by any means. You still have the MVP at quarterback. You still have all these receivers we were just talking about earlier. At some point, maybe that does click for all of them. You'd expect it to, but at least in the short term, Benson's running hard. Like you said, you could get Starks back. Maybe just kind of ride the running game.
Yep.
All right, we got to talk about Jay Cutler, Bob. The guy is an enigma. everybody saw his reaction to some of those plays in the game Thursday night. He snapped Jamarcus Webb, threw an F-bomb, kind of gave him a little chest bump there, and he caught a lot of criticism for it. It's kind of funny. I mean, in the NFC Championship game, Jay Cutler is just absolutely chastised for not showing enough emotion, and now he's showing too much emotion. I think everybody's in agreement that he probably shouldn't have done what he did, though.
I've never even talked to Jay Cutler, so, never been around him. I watch him, and I just don't know. I don't really know what to think. He's a hard guy to even to guess what's going through him. His body language and the way he operates, the way he throws, and the chances he takes. I just don't figure him out. He tries to play a little bit like Brett Favre, but he's not that great leader like Favre was, and, you know. Just willful person. I don't know. How do you see Cutler?
Well, it's funny you use that Favre comparison. Favre's a guy who played through how many injuries? And Jay Cutler, not so much. So I think that Favre kind of endeared himself to teammates by gutting out so many of those injuries. Guys probably really respected him in the locker room. I mean, you were there. A lot of them did, I'd imagine.
They sure did.
I don't know if it's that case with Jay Cutler. I mean, I'm not in that Bears locker room. It seems like a lot of the teammates like the guy. Remember how they were defending him in the NFC Championship game? But the way that he was kind of getting after his own teammates there was a little surprising. I will say this, though. I don't have a problem with the F-bomb. After he just gets absolutely blindsided by a guy's whiffed block. We were just talking here before we went on air. I remember when I put quarterback in high school, one of my best friends got me killed. Blindside, left tackle. You know, you get in his face and, you know, it's heat of the moment. It's football. We're not talking about, you know, we're not out drinking tea or drinking coffee at the coffee shop here, Bob. I mean, this stuff happens, but it's on national TV. It was more than an F-bomb. He kind of gave him a chest bump. He even walked away. He kind of looked like a sourpuss there. I mean, he did not handle it well.
I didn't even see the replay of the exchange with Jamarcus Webb. So I've never even seen that. So I've read about it and hear what you're saying here. You know, Aaron Rodgers had one of these too after he threw the pick to Tim Jennings down the sidelines. Okay, so McCarthy basically said yesterday that Jones hung him out to dry and didn't run a good route, you know? I mean, as a QB, okay. I mean, stuff happens. Lance Briggs dropped the ball on Rodgers. Stuff happens. Jones is not trying to do that kind of thing, just like Aaron's not trying to make a bad throw. You know, as a quarterback, as the MVP, as the face of the franchise, you know that camera's going to be on you within a second or two after the pick.
That's true.
To berate a teammate when you know it's going to be on camera in front of, you know, not only 70,000 in-house, but millions and millions elsewhere, I just cannot see doing that. I mean, Rodgers did a lot of that his first 2 years when he was a struggling rookie, and he would, in those exhibition games, and he'd point to teammates and point to receivers, and he was playing so poorly at that point. It really, it was unbecoming of a first-round pick. You know, just improve, get better, don't worry about your supporting cast, work it out. But then for him to do it to Jones, I just thought it was beneath him all the way. He's too good for that stuff. I mean, why alienate Jones? I mean, I'm sure they're friends. Rodgers, you know, a fine teammate to all these guys. They respect him. But you don't want to be showing people up in the middle of a public scene. I can't see it.
Well, there's probably a balance here between knowing the camera's on you and knowing that you're on this national stage and the competitive juices kind of flowing. I mean, this we can't expect these guys to be robots. They're going to react to things as well. I mean, it's something in the middle, I would think. I agree with you. I mean, these cameras are on all these players, but they're competitive too. I mean, if a guy's dropped a pass or even, you know, say Rodgers or a quarterback makes a mistake, you know, they're going to show a little emotion after that too. I just think a lot goes into this.
Aaron Rodgers is so intelligent and so in control of himself.
Uh-huh.
He wasn't hit on the play, Tyler. Now, when you get hit, we both played a little QB years ago, but when you get hit, okay, your senses go off, your helmet's askew. I mean, you know, you're ding, man. You're hurting. All right. But he wasn't hit.
True.
I mean, he is a guy totally in control of everything he says, everything he does. I'm not saying it's premeditated, but he did have 2 or 3 seconds before he decided to go off on that receiver, and he just did it.
So we'll say that Aaron Rodgers is a lot smarter than Jay Cutler in terms of public perception. Cutler, it just seems, really does not care what anybody thinks about him, ever. And that's the sense you get talking to some people down there in Chicago. Rodgers is a lot more in tune with all of that. So you're right. It was kind of a little out of character. Like you said, early in his career, it was a little different, but he seems like he has kind of matured over the years. But let's move on here, Bob. The secondary, there was a lot of shaking around this last game. Maybe they did find a little bit of clarity on the back end. Sam Shields, like we talked about, had a strong game. You saw Jerron McMillan replace M.D. Jennings as the nickel safety. A lot of turnovers forced. What did you see out of that secondary, and did they turn a corner against Chicago?
Played well. You know, the Capers' plan was beautiful, well executed. They're going to see a lot more speed at wide receiver with other teams, although Seattle doesn't have a very good group.
Golden Tate doesn't scare you?
He does not, no. Shields played well. I don't know if he can keep it up. He was up and down all summer long. Casey Hayward seemed fine in the slot. Jerron McMillan, he stayed deeper than the deepest.
Yeah.
It seemed to me, and he did some things in the box. He, you know, he was banging with 300-pound guards coming at him. That was impressive.
And he kind of bounced back from that dropped interception with a nice diving pick there. That was a big play for him.
He did. So, Davin House, when do you think he's going to return?
boy, he keeps saying this week is his goal. He said it before the 49er game. He said it before the Chicago game. I think that you just stay patient with Devon House right now. Why rush the guy back before he's ready with the dislocated shoulder? I mean, you've had corners on this team try to play with shoulder injuries. They weren't themselves. He's a young player that showed a lot of promise. I think they're going to be cautious with him. I'd still be surprised if he – just a gut feeling if he played this week. You know, why did MD Jennings start ahead of John McMillan? I know McMillan's a rookie. He's from Maine. But MD Jennings wasn't that proven either. And just at practice, I mean, McMillan showed the potential. And Dom Capers was asked that. We talked about it a little bit the other day. And you know, I think they chose Jennings' experience over McMillan at first. But right now, it's pretty clear that McMillan's the better safety, at least to me. You're kind of giving me a look.
Well, for the 6 weeks out there, Tyler, I probably would have started Jennings over McMillan.
Would you?
Yeah, I would have given him the edge. He's a pretty bright guy, Jennings. And everybody's spoken highly of his command of the system. I probably would have given him a slight edge.
A smart guy, intelligent guy, knows the system, that's for sure. But in terms of athletic ability, physical play, I mean, McMillan is probably a notch above him in everything on the field in terms of what he can bring to the defense. It's just a matter of kind of picking things up, I'd imagine. Do you think that he has picked things up and he's going to be the safety there for a while?
We know he's going to have some bad plays this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's possible Sean Richardson could get involved in this thing. It's possible. I don't know about Sean McMillan or Jerron McMillan. We just got to see a lot more.
All right. Sounds good. Trying to draw some sweeping conclusion from you right now. You're not taking the bait. All right. Let's get into some Twitter questions here before we sign off. Pulling it up right now. All right. This one from Rusty Shackleford. Why was Jarrett Bush allowed on the field for defensive snaps in week one?
Wow.
Well, Rusty, they like the guy, what he brings to the locker room, what he brings every day in practice. He's a physical player. He's been around a while. Has definitely endeared himself to coaches. I just think all of that combined kind of got him that shot first. And in training camp, there really wasn't that big of a difference between Bush, Shields, Hayward. Remember, Shields was out for a little while with an injury, so Bush was kind of able to hang on for a while there. And he didn't allow a ton of big plays. I think that almost by default and by him earning it, he was just the starter in week one.
I agree all the way.
All right. Yep. Let's go to what defense are we more likely to see this year? The one against San Francisco or the one against Chicago? This from Matt in San Diego with the Peter Griffin avatar.
One in between?
I think so.
As a best guess, I'd say somewhere in the middle.
How did San Francisco and Chicago differ defensively against Green Bay from what you saw?
Or defensively or offensively? So what they did offensively.
We're talking about the Packers defense. I thought he was talking about the defense that was facing. Yeah.
You know, neither one had a burner.
Right.
Unless you call Randy Moss a burner. But, all right, Marshall would have been... They both want to run the ball. Niners have a heck of a lot better offensive line.
Right. Yeah, that's
like
true.
Light years difference.
That's true.
The quarterbacks, Cutler should be better, but he wasn't.
I think that's the big difference there. Alex Smith is a guy who is not going to give you anything. He will give you zero errant passes, and the turnovers were the story of the game against Chicago. Jay Cutler just gave him some off-the-back foot prayers, and then the game just kind of turned. So
that's the difference right there?
I think it's this quarterback-driven league.
Boy, yep.
All righty, let's scroll on down here. We talked about Jerron McMillan, Stephen Hurley, but do you think that he is the permanent replacement for MD Jennings, Stephen S?
I do not know.
All right.
What do you say?
I think he is.
You're going with him.
I'm going with him. Right, I think he had to prove that he's comfortable in space and coverage just a little bit to get that chance. I like MD Jennings. He's a stand-up guy. He took responsibility for his mistakes in that season opener, but he's just not as talented as McMillan.
Okay.
All righty here. This one from AJ at NFL owner GBP. What has brought Clay Matthews III back to his 2010 form? The guy has 6 sacks through 2 games. He had 6 all of last season. But I don't think he really had a bad year last season. He was their best player on defense.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. His pressure numbers were good last year. He played on the other side. I don't know, but all I know is starting in this training camp, after about 2 weeks, I said to myself, this guy is playing as intense and as well as I've ever seen him. Mm-hmm. And this has carried forward for 5 weeks. He was unreal in training camp and in those exhibition games. He was terrific.
Yeah, and here we were talking about contracts. He's the one guy you pretty much give a blank check to, right?
Looks like it.
I mean, yeah. Mario Williams money. Straight cash, homie, Bob. All right, Andy Nolan, at Andy NOL. Are there any veteran defensive backs out there the Packers could get in addition to a draft pick for Greg Jennings? And he says he loves the podcast.
Well, I don't think they're going. They don't want a DB.
No,
I mean, they got a bunch of young DBs. That's not what they do. A D lineman, perhaps. I don't know. They have needs. You know, they're not doing a backup quarterback, but an offensive lineman is what they really need.
Yeah, they do.
There you go. That's what they'd be.
We didn't talk
for.
About the offensive line much today. That for a future podcast, we'll have to get into that a little bit more.
So, you know, player for player trades are difficult. I mean, I'm sure Andy knows that. You know, you got to match salary and not match it, but account for it. The Packers are, you know, pretty tight on the cap, and I don't think they can't take on a big contract now from elsewhere. So, O-line, I think.
Too bad this isn't like the NBA where Joe Smith's expiring contract gets tossed around to half the teams in the league. Just isn't going to happen in the NFL, I guess. All right, let's talk about this book you have out, Bob. Give us a little more insight on it. I read the chapter a couple nights ago on Seattle and Pittsburgh, and it was kind of a lame Super Bowl, so I just kind of wanted to read. Pretty insightful stuff. I mean, there's things in these games I just didn't know happened watching the game.
Thanks a lot, Tyler. Yeah. I try to treat every game and work as hard on every game as, you know, the Denver blowouts and those awful Buffalo games. Sorry, Tyler.
Hey, it's no offense taken. I was about 5 years old.
I mean, every game had a story to tell. And if you're a writer, you know, you try to do the best job, as you know, Tyler, on every story that comes around. And so, yeah, thanks a lot. I mean, there's just weird games and weird stuff in all these stories.
Then we're talking about the Ultimate Super Bowl book. Yep. I don't think we put the title out there. But again,
The second edition. Hardcover. Games 1 to 46. The Packers story is about 7,500 words. Super Bowl 45. All original material. And you want a personalized copy? Send me an email at bmcginn, B-M-C-G-I-N-N, at jrn.com. And Pat and I will take care of you.
One of the most interesting players you talked to. Who was it for that book?
Players? Whew, boy, Tyler.
Or coaches.
Great stuff with B.J. Raji, Jordy Nelson on this game, Scott Fujita, the Saints, you know, the guy who's in Bounty Gate, man, he told me everything about what they were doing on defense under Greg Williams that day. Just on and on. There's just a lot of them.
Well, he's your guy. If you want a book, shoot him an email. We'll make it happen. And, Bob, I think that's going to do it for us here at McGinn Headquarters. And good. Enjoy the rest of your day. See the grandson.
Have a good weekend, Tyler.
Okay. And so your Michigan Wolverines, they're going to lose to Air Force today, probably, right?
Or do they play? No, they play UMass.
Who do they play? It's probably some cupcake.
Some idiot. After they got hammered.
You know how your Wolverines schedule. Well, I guess they did have Alabama. They got their butts whipped. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thanks a lot for listening, everybody. And if you got a question, shoot us a tweet, shoot us an email. We'll try to make it happen. Thanks a lot.
It's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Ugh, fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.